Welcome to GTM Gals, a TAC Network original created in partnership with Share Your Genius. I'm your host, Danny Howe, and I'm bringing you with me into my conversations with some of B2B Tech's best and brightest women as they share their insights on growing both personally and professionally in this ever-changing industry. So grab your coffee or wine and let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome to GTM Gals. This is Danny, and we have another special guest for you today. Her name is Laura Kendall, and she is the head of marketing at Innovent, a software company that helps wineries run more efficient and profitable businesses. Previously, she's led high-performing teams and scaled growth from sub 1 mil ARR through 10 mil ARR at companies such as Simple Legal, Mad Kudu, and Guide. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm super excited to learn about you.
Thank you, Danny. Excited to be here.
For sure. And I know you recently joined your company at Innovent, which is a pretty cool company. I've never heard about this vertical before. So I'm curious on exploring more about that. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I wanted to kind of just cover your entire impressive track record as a marketing leader. So you've definitely led a lot of teams at many fast-growing startups, some earlier stage, some later stage. So I'm curious, what were your biggest learnings building from zero to one? Because I feel like that's the most exciting time, but also the hardest time as a marketer.
Both of those statements are true, I would say. But I think there's a couple of things. The first that shocked me a bit was the need and how much effort you need to put forward with marketing your own marketing internally. It's a pretty misunderstood department, and it's actually pretty hard to connect all aspects of marketing to revenue. Sure, some, it's very easy to connect the dots, and others, it's a lot more challenging. So I see it really as my role, or learned that it was my role as a marketing leader, or if you are the only marketer on the team, to make sure that the rest of the company knows what's going on in your department. And if you want those programs to be successful, you need people to understand why you're doing them and be excited about them. So that's one. The other is something that I think as marketing folks, we constantly need to be thinking about, and that's focus. If everything is a priority, nothing's a priority, right? So it's very easy for us to do a lot of things. It's always other folks across the business are going to have a lot of ideas that come your way. And being that air quote, yes department doesn't get you anywhere. So it's critical to pick, a couple of things, 2 to 3 growth channels that you're going to lean into and really say no to the rest.
I love that. And I feel like, as junior marketers, sometimes when you start off in your career, you're almost like anything that you get thrown at, you're like, oh, I'm going to try this. I'm going to take this. But I feel like as you kind of mature in your career and you start to lead teams, that's when you got to also protect your team as well, right?
Exactly. And it's so easy when you have limited resources to burn people out. And I've been there. So I think that's a good point.
What are some of the most exciting things that you've worked on as, I guess, an earlier leader in early stage companies?
I think really being part of helping establish the marketing foundation and really across the whole go-to-market team. So oftentimes when you join very early, there's not, very well established buyer journey. And so you get to be part of building that and ideally coming in at the same time as a sales leader and building that culture across the sales and marketing org where there's strong alignment is probably the most exciting part for me.
I've definitely been at companies where sometimes you start off as partners, but then as you start to grow, the sales leadership, marketing leadership, sometimes you butt heads a little bit, I think it's healthy discourse, but also being able to align your KPIs together. So I'm curious on hearing your thoughts around that, because you did mention also making sure to allow the company to know what marketing's working on, how marketing is impacting revenue. So do you have any tips for marketers that are going through this to really do that internal marketing and making sure your goals align with the rest of the org?
First of all, I agree. The healthy tension between the two departments is important. And I've also been on the other side where I've come into a very established organization and have been explicitly told you need to break down the silo between the two. And so what I like about my role in joining early stage companies is I get to come in and make sure that silo doesn't get built. Tips that I would have, certainly make sure that you're in lockstep, whether you are the marketing leader or you are a revenue marketer or otherwise working with sales, make sure you're constantly in communication with them. Make sure that feedback loop is there either through your CRM or through weekly meetings or Slack channels. There's so many different ways that we can keep up to speed on what's happening on the front lines. And also make sure that when you're building out your forecasts for leads, for pipeline, for revenue, you're doing that with sales. and not working on a set of goals independently. Because what will end up happening when you need to present to leadership or to the board is you'll have two separate sets of numbers and two different ideas of where that pipeline is going to come from. And it just looks sloppy and disconnected.
Yeah, you're not looking out of the same spreadsheet. You're looking at like two separate ones, trying to explain both sides of things. So as a marketing leader, I'm curious on hearing also about hiring. There's a few marketers that I know, they're like the first marketers on the team. So they're like kind of doing everything from demand gen, content generation, brand. So as like the marketing leader of like an early organization, how do you hire for like your first role and what do you hire for?
There's certain skills that I think make somebody a good candidate for just an early stage company in general. Things like passion or hunger, being adaptable, constantly changing environment, right? And I think especially in 2024, being tech savvy, we have to leverage tools and technology to scale ourselves. We can't just throw humans at every problem. That said, I think it depends on the company and the marketing strategy. So sometimes I could see, and I've experienced where bringing in a generalist who's got maybe one or two pillars of marketing where they lean into, but they're an inch deep across the whole function, maybe isn't the best bet. So like if you have really strong conviction that community is a defensible moat that you're building and is the right direction for your business, you probably want to lean into looking for someone full-time that leans towards that skill set. But if I were going to generalize the approach I've taken across like the last three or four companies, it would be this. I like to do something myself first or otherwise be scrappy. Maybe if it's something that's completely outside of my wheelhouse, I'll bring in a freelancer to test something. But the idea here is that you can get some early insights quickly with like a crawl, walk, run approach. And once you have those insights, you're probably ready to hire and pour fuel on the fire. Let me give you an example. At one company, we had the hypothesis that having casual virtual events were the way for us to build an audience and to start building community. So in that case, you design or spin up a weekly or a monthly webinar. Doesn't take much to get something like that pulled off. Just a couple of tools, a zap to connect things, a guest, and you're kind of off to the races. And if you imagine being in that position and you host a couple of them and you're getting really good feedback and registration is starting to like go up and to the right, that's the positive insights that you're looking for. And at a certain point, it's going to become a full-time job for somebody to continue to scale that program, continue to bring improvements and innovate on it. So I just think it's important that you try something out first before you hire someone that is specific to a particular function or a skill, and only to learn that that's not the right direction for your business. And then you have to pivot and deal with, you know, moving team members around.
I like the way that you talked about it as well, almost like an experiment. You know, what's the hypothesis? Like, what are you testing against? Putting a little bit of like your own time into that and then seeing like what signals you get from that. I've definitely seen like some teams where they feel like they got a good handle on it, you know, like they invest a lot into it and then they realize, oh, shoot, we didn't give enough time for the experiment to run. So I think starting small is definitely, I agree with you, is the way to go on these things here. Curious on your thoughts around hiring freelancers and also hiring people who are fractional, because I've definitely seen a lot of companies start doing that with budgets being reduced or, you know, not enough headcount. Do you have any tips for other marketing leaders that are thinking like, should I hire full time? Should I do fractional?
I think you have to look at the skill set across your team and the specific use case for it. I'm a big proponent of finding folks through your network. I like to work with people that I get a glowing review from, you know, somebody, another marketing leader, which is a very common way for consultants and contractors and freelancers to kind of build their book of business. But I think it's tough. And I've certainly experienced where bringing someone in who's not a direct member of your team actually slows you down. So vetting that person or that agency or whatever it may be, and ensuring that you have rules of engagement and you're setting them up for success. It's unfair to pass like, you know, an idea to someone and expect them to execute it exactly to your brand standards and to your tone or voice if it's content without first getting them up to speed. And that's an investment. So that's something to consider as well.
I feel like even with freelancers and also with fractional folks like myself, I'm working with a few fractional clients, you're still technically part of the team, just not as involved. So I feel like the more work that someone does when it comes to like letting the freelancer understanding like here's the goals, but also here's like the bigger organization and gives them like a bigger picture of what do I have to work with?
Yes, definitely. And actually, that's a good point. Like, as much as you can make them feel like they're part of the team, bring them into those team meetings, give them the strategic vision and bring them into the fold as much as possible, I think is only a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to talk about something that you propose. And I know that's something that's true and dear to a lot of like marketers who are going through this, especially women, which is like thinking about like starting a family or thinking about the journey of motherhood while being a marketer. I know this is a big topic. And I definitely seen a few marketing leaders on LinkedIn recently start talking about this as well. So curious on your journey around that, like as a mother, but also learning to balance like your career and also the expectations around wanting to start a family. I know it's a big topic, but let's talk about that a little bit more.
It is. And I think it is a little bit taboo to talk about and like bringing the blending of your personal life and your professional life. But I think it's an important one to talk about. And I appreciate you opening up your forum to like expose that in the spirit of GTM gals and casual conversations, right? You know, in full disclosure, I have a 3-year-old. I went through that transition exactly 3 years ago. She just turned 3 a week ago. For me, I don't know that I went into it being like nervous or scared or I waited or anything like that because of any preconceived notions. But when I look back, I realize a few things. And one of that is just like based on my experience. I only worked for one manager who went on maternity leave in my career and went through that transition. That was about 15 years ago. So that was long before I was thinking about building a family. And having spent most of my career in early stage startups, the team size is not large. And so I didn't have many coworkers, you know, especially not peers in leadership that had a child or went through that transition while I worked with them. So I just didn't have a lot of experience to draw inspiration from on how to handle it when I was found myself that unique position. I definitely felt a little bit worried about having this like mother qualifier and decreasing the quality of my work. Subconsciously, I think that was going on for me. This is like almost, you know, embarrassing to say in some ways, but I actually thought it was a good thing that I could work evenings at 7:30 p.m. I could get on, or I could do a call at 9 with the team in India, things of that nature, while others couldn't because they were, you know, dealing with after school life, dealing with their children. And like the joke's definitely on me because I spent the better part of a decade working overtime and burning myself out. And I am truly pretty regretful when I look back and think about how I completely misunderstood working parents. Like today, if you ask me, like the new Laura is like working parents are higher on my list in terms of better teammates, more productive. The list would go on, but I was immature at that point and I know better now. And once I did become a working parent myself, the reality is that my quality and focus has increased. What you realize is that there's only so much time in the day to do all the things that you need to do, whether it's for yourself, for your partner, for your home, for your family, your children, for your job. And so the less important items just naturally fall off. A good friend of mine that once said to me that like the things that need to get done will get done. And she doesn't know this, but that has stuck with me so strongly. And when I'm feeling overwhelmed and feeling like I'm dropping every ball that I have in the air, I try to remind myself that it's not my job to be excellent at everything all the time. Giving 100% might be only giving 20% of what you have, but you're giving 100% of that 20%.
I love that perspective. And I feel like it goes back to like when we started this conversation too, like learning what to say no to and being able to be clear about those boundaries. Because I can definitely relate, like I don't really have kids right now, but I'm at a stage where, you know, I might be thinking about it. So I'm curious on hearing also from a fellow woman, when you were about to, you know, start a family, how did you communicate that to your team, your manager, and I guess set the expectations too that, hey, I'm going to be coming back. I'm also going to kick ass at my job, but here's a choice that I made for myself.
Well, I'll say that there wasn't a conversation leading up to it, much like many women and couples trying to conceive or trying to build a family, we struggled a bit. And so that it wasn't a, you know, we're going to do this and we communicated it openly. I don't think that's not something that's very common. And there's probably a whole line of thinking about why that should change or how we could improve the conversation around it. That said, when I was ready to communicate that this was a phase of my journey, I was very nervous. I had just started at a company the pandemic had hit a month prior. Add all that together. I first time ever being remote, haven't met a lot of the team, knew I was going to be having this within the first year of being at a company. And so when you think about being at a small company, you are a big percentage of the workforce. And so taking any time off is felt significantly, especially in leadership of a small marketing team. That was the first kind of feeling I had. And it sucks to have that feeling when you're supposed to be, you know, societally driven, feeling excited and eager for this next stage. Sure, nervousness, but I spent a lot of time like stressed about how am I going to do this? And looking back, I wish it were different. Fortunately, though, I was met with excitement by my CEO at the time. I'm sure he was probably like, you know, WTF, what am I going to do? But, you know, he led with his human self and I'm like forever grateful for that. From there, I actually reached out to some of my trusted, you know, friends in marketing, other folks that I knew that I hadn't worked with, but just friends that are in the business world that have gone through this. And I was like, okay, tell me what you did. Like, what did you document? What are things that I need to be aware of? What are the questions I'm not setting up? You know, small companies don't have a giant HR department that you can lean into about how to navigate this. How to, like, what paperwork do you need from the government and things of that nature? It's like the amount of things you need to be thinking about is pretty vast. And what I actually ended up doing was we were at the point where we were starting to build up the team. So I was hustling to hire and get people in so I could spend some time with them before I went on leave. But I also ended up bringing on an agency a few months before so I could ensure that I had coverage while I was out.
It sounds like there's like a lot of questions you got to ask yourself, but also like a lot of things you need to set up before you're able to take that leap. I'm curious on also like, what were the questions that you and your friend discussed, like the things that you need to consider before taking that time off? And also another question that I personally just have is like, I guess how do you decide to take how much time off? You know, that's always a question too. I know there's different policies in different companies, but how do you know what's best for you there?
Well, I think the sad truth is that you don't necessarily have a say in how much time you get. I want to, of course, recognize the privilege of even having an option. And the process of going back to work was a unique one. And I think everyone, you know, part of why I want to share this is because I want to know other people's experiences. And if I go through this again, how I can do better. But I learned the hard way that, you know, overcommitting and coming back too soon unnecessarily was a detriment to myself and my family. I saw myself as a failure if I asked for more time. Some of the things that I talked about with other friends and contemplated was, you know, how I come back. Oftentimes, like a standard is maybe 3 months, you know, 12 weeks. There's certain federal policies that provide additional time or cover payment across that. And companies have different policies, as you mentioned. I opted for a kind of like slow transition. So, you know, coming back maybe one day a week. And then transitioning after a couple of weeks, 2 days a week, and then transitioning to, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. So it wasn't a hard line in the sand after 12 weeks of I'm back full time. And so if given that flexibility, that's sometimes a nice way to approach it.
I really like that because then you're kind of easing yourself into back at work again rather than like, you know, being slammed on your first day. I feel like regardless, that's a very overwhelming time, like after you've been spending time with your new baby and then suddenly having to make that mental shift. I feel like that mental shift is probably going to be very difficult for a lot of women.
I think just giving yourself grace. I know that's said a lot to new parents. It's so true that you're not going to come back into your professional life guns a-blazing and, you know, moving at 60 miles an hour. So you've got to give yourself time to ease back into it.
A lot of other mothers have probably dealt with this. I haven't yet, but I know like I've heard some of my friends who just went through this and they're like, I need to hold myself back from not checking my email like when I'm taking maternity leave. So curious on your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I always wonder like what other countries, there's always this talk track of in the US we're workaholics. And I've already shared that I've dealt with that and I would certainly give myself that title in a previous life. I guess I did a little bit. My outlet though was, and I actually wrote an article about it. I started to, you know, sleepless nights, up with the baby. I started to like connect all the things that I was experiencing in my new role of mom to marketing and just the parallels. And that I felt like that was like helping me check this box of still keeping a professional keeping my marketing hat on and not losing that sense or that part of myself, I actually did a pretty good job of just like, I deleted Slack from my phone. I didn't check emails. Like 8 weeks in, I checked in with the team and chatted with the CEO and things. But I think a big part of that is if you feel like you're setting the team up for success, you also want them to feel like they can run the show without you and motivate them and inspire them, make sure that they know that they have your full trust. And so you're doing a disservice to the company and yourself, in my opinion, if you're constantly checking in and trying to be in two places at once.
That's a really good point. I guess also like when you're, you know, leaving for maternity leave, it's almost like an opportunity to say like, hey, I trust you, you know, you've got this while I'm away and I will be there for you when I come back. I think that kind of like, I think mental security for the team is so important to build too.
Totally.
Now that you've got a toddler and now that you're back into your full-time role. So curious on balancing that kind of lifestyle as well. Like, you know, you mentioned that you've definitely done some overtime when you were not a mother yet. And now, you know, you're trying to like balance the two sides of yourself. So curious on your tips around that and how can other women learn to have better boundaries, but also make sure that they have time for both sides.
I found that my daughter has almost forced me to have better boundaries. When I pick her up from daycare, I can't possibly be engaging with her and replying to emails or being on Zoom calls. And so I really leaned into that and got myself accustomed to feeling okay not replying to things immediately and that certain things can wait. And I'm not curing cancer. And so like, work is just work. And I've often felt that calling your work people a family didn't feel right because at the end of the day, we're all replaceable. But I can't be replaced and my daughter can't be replaced and my partner can't be replaced. And the thing that I always think about, and I kind of alluded to this already, but like there's seasons in life. You've got a certain amount of different things that you're dealing with and you can't be great at everything in every season.
100%. And I think that's one mentality that I've noticed, like once you start to build a family or when you start to really think about things from a different perspective, it's like there's work and there's life. And, you know, there's a little bit of intersection in that for sure. But in the end of the day, I feel like when we're stressed out on certain things that happen, like in the end of the day, it is just work.
Totally. And it also sheds light on the types of companies you want to work for. And of course, before I wasn't looking to work for a company that didn't prioritize working parents, but you start to notice different ways that organizations make it easier for folks that want to live a balanced life. There's a lot of talk in the news about companies that are, you know, startups get a bad rap that you've got to always be on and it's a hustle and it's a grind. And in many ways it is, but some of that I found the people that gravitate towards startups, myself included, put a lot of that pressure on themselves. And so we also can't just blame the businesses for burning people out. We have to take some of that ownership ourselves. And so that was a big kind of like aha moment for me through the last, you know, 3 or 4 years of that's on me to figure out my boundaries. And I am grateful for having a reason to stop working and being forced into that in some ways.
What are some of the tips or questions that you think a marketer can ask the company, let's say like that you're interviewing with, knowing that like, hey, I might want to have a family down the line. How do you understand a company might be like a good culture for you to be in, especially like one that's friendly for working parents, for example?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you can get some insight into it by asking about the culture, understanding how people work when they're engaged. Like, is it a very heavy meeting focused or is it very async? And a lot of people send like videos and Slack messages and emails and things. So you can kind of get your work done when you need. I would also openly ask about the benefits package and what they offer to get a sense for that. And if you are a parent, like one thing I asked was, you know, how many working parents are there? And at my current company, there's a good group of us. And it feels like you have this kind of like, you know, group of folks that you can chat with about things that are happening outside of your work life. So those are a few things that come to mind. There's probably others if I thought harder about it, but I think it's an important thing to do to make sure that you feel that it's the right fit for you.
And also, I think right now, like a touchy subject is around like, you know, the uncertainty in the economy and also like with the layoffs. I know a few of my friends that like have put aside like plans for the future just to make sure like they secure their economic standing and, you know, like their job. Unfortunately, that's, you know, what some people have to do at this time. So I'm curious on your thoughts around this. So, you know, like if someone is looking to start a family, like how can they balance that uncertainty, you know, that's going on right now? How can they kind of work around the nervousness? Hey, like if I take this step in my career, like it's going to set me back.
I don't know that I have a good answer for it, to be honest. It's probably so personal. If it were me, I would probably stack rank my personal goals and values independent of what the company, current company or future company's goals and values, right? Like, you know, look internally for what I'm personally looking to accomplish and what path is the right one. Maybe that's, you know, staying at your current company and not trying to get that promotion. Maybe it's both. Maybe that's the possibility. Maybe it's taking a step back, your plans, whether personally or professionally.
I think it's a hard thing for someone to have to do some digging themselves, just understanding like what's important to them at that stage in their life. It is really tough. Like, you know, when there's big life changes, even I would say like one hot topic I've been talking to my friends about is also moving, right? Like for companies that are doing like an RTO policy, they've built a family in another state and now they got to like move back. So that's like a whole other thing that a lot of folks are dealing with at the moment too.
Yeah, it's a good point that this kind of goes beyond just building a family. There's changes that happen throughout our lives. Do what's best for you and your family. If that means the company is deprioritized, that's the right decision for you then.
I feel like that's something that a lot of people need to hear, like just from another woman in marketing. So thank you so much for saying that, Laura.
I believe that there's always a way to make something work.
So just shifting gears a little bit too. So I know we talked a lot about like your transition into motherhood. And now that you've got an amazing toddler with you as well in your life, curious on hearing a little bit more about your role at Innovent. So I know like you've done a lot of leadership roles in like B2B tech companies. With this company, it's definitely something that's very new to me. Like I didn't know there was a software that helps wineries. So curious on just from a professional development perspective, like how did you get into this field? And also how can a marketer really quickly learn about like a new vertical or industry that they're getting themselves into?
Wine is very cool. It's something I've always been interested in. So this is definitely like a pinch me moment. And I will say that like the biggest learning for me in switching to the vertical SaaS and into this industry has been the uniqueness of it and how vast the uniqueness is. And I'll give you a few examples. So tech adoption, the wine industry in general is not really thought of as modern technology adopters. They've been pretty underserved in that aspect. Previous role, having dealt with a similar allergy to technology in legal, was actually very helpful as I thought about how to go to market with this product in a new industry. And to me, this really translates as an opportunity to modernize the entire industry, which is a very exciting thing to be part of. And then wine as a business and the production of the product is a very cyclical path. And so that comes with any agriculture product, right? And so I grew up on a farm and having that background was actually also quite helpful in thinking through the, you know, harvest season and the different points in time throughout the calendar year and different challenges that folks across the wine business have to deal with. And then lastly, their product, wine, right? Once it's produced, you know, depending on the type of wine, it's actually not immediately ready for sale, which is quite different from other, you know, consumer packaged products and certainly different than software, which causes some interesting challenges with how they have to manage their finances. And so learning about these different, you know, the uniqueness of the industry was important. And to get to your question about like how to like get up to speed and how to strengthen your knowledge within the industry, the first is you got to talk to the team. You're coming in as the new teammate to an established business and you've got expertise already pre-built in from the founders and from the folks that have joined prior to you. At Innovent, I'm super lucky that a lot of folks on the team, I dare I say like nearly 50% have a career in the wine industry. They are ex-winemakers and so they are the subject matter experts. So I'm sure you can imagine as a marketer, the like excitement to be able to tap into that as a resource. And then obviously go meet your customers, like get out there and talk to them, ask them not just about how they're using your product, but what's going on in their lives, what's keeping them up at night, what are the different things they're doing on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. And then lastly, like I've been listening to like different podcasts, reading articles, subscribing to, you know, different newsletters in the industry, and just all around trying to get a better grasp of the whole space, including the different players. There's a lot of this kind of like spider web of folks that are all supporting wineries. I just have a new perspective when I drink wine or when I'm going to visit a wine region, just given the knowledge that I've learned over the last few months. So I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, it's an entirely different challenge having one particular industry to sell to versus multiple.
That sounds like such a cool job, Laura. Like, I would love to do business trips in like Napa Valley, do some tastings, meet the owners. When it comes to also like the branding of wine, right? Like a lot of times, like for people who don't really know, like notes or the tasting, they look at like how pretty the bottle is. So I'm curious on like from a marketing perspective, how do you guys work from like a brand perspective or like a trust perspective to build out these campaigns for the companies?
We don't actually work with the wineries on how they brand their end product. But I will say that part of the challenge that the industry faces is being more relevant to especially consumers that are up and coming and have a lot of different preferences. So the relevancy is something that I know winery owners and the industry at large are taking into account when they think about how they're positioning themselves.
What's your favorite wine? Just like for a fun question.
I really like Pet Nat right now, which is maybe a little bit controversial. You know, I was really big into beer at one point and I love sours and it kind of reminds me of that time in my life. So I've been really enjoying some of those lately.
Ooh, you gotta give us some recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this conversation with you, Laura. I know we're like over time, so I just want to be wary of that. But I will include Laura's LinkedIn URL in the show notes below if you wanted to connect with her, especially if you know you're also a working mother or working marketer. I think that's a great resource for you. And also she's going to be a great mentor to you. I know for myself, I'll probably reach out to you, Laura, like when I do want to also start my own family. I think I'm starting to think about that. I'm at the age, which is kind of scary. So I'll definitely leave her contact for you. Feel free to reach out to her. And also I'll leave the show notes below as well. So if you're someone who likes to also read what we talked about rather than just listen to the whole thing, that will be available for you as well. But thank you so much once again, Laura, for joining us today and also for your transparency and your honesty for such like an amazing topic as well. I know this topic is something that's very personal to you, so I really appreciate the fact that you were able to share your thoughts on the show today.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, definitely reach out if anyone wants to connect on any of the topics.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Laura. Hope you have a great weekend and talk to you soon. Thanks for joining me on this episode of GTM Gals. For the latest episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. And you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Xiaohongshu, or on my website. All of this is linked in the show notes. See you next time. This show is a TAC Network original production created in partnership with Share Your Genius.